Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 24th of June. Education, this hour of the program, 481 full-time teachers in the MPS district received layoff notices this month, including 305 certified to teach elementary school, and more than 600 substitute teachers received layoff notices, letters saying there was no reasonable assurance that they would work in the 2010-2011 school year. A four-day school week has gained popularity in this country with 120 school districts where students attend school just 4 days a week. It's a cost-saving tactic that has gained quite a bit of popularity. Some teachers have the same salaries. Some have salaries that are lower. And then you think of people who drive school buses and work in the cafeteria, and many of them have seen their salaries go down some 20%. There is a law that's in the works here, and we'll see how it may be winding its way through Congress, if it will. It's a $23 billion education jobs fund to prevent the layoffs of teachers, principals, and other critical school staff. And we'll talk about where that is this hour. We have an audience, a lot of teachers who are on summer break and will be listening. So it will be great to hear from you during the course of this hour to find out what's happening in your school district and what your thoughts are about not enough money for educating our children. Bob Peterson is joining us in our Milwaukee studios. He teaches fifth grade at La Escuela Fratni, a two-way bilingual public school in Milwaukee. He's a founding editor of Rethinking Schools and is a frequent writer and speaker. He co-edited Rethinking Columbus, The Next 500 Years, Transforming Teacher Unions, Fighting for Better Schools and Social Justice. And in 1995, he was selected as Wisconsin Elementary Teacher of the Year. Bob, thank you for being with us. Nice to see you again.
Yes, my pleasure.
Also joining us by phone is Klaus von Sostro. He's the executive director of the Learning First Alliance, where he works with the CEOs and elected leaders of the Alliance member organizations to implement Alliance goals and strategies. He was a policy director at the National Alliance of Businesses, and he conducted the opening phase of the American Diploma Project's Workplace Study, a national initiative to identify what the business community expects high school graduates to know and to be able to do. Klaus, thank you so much for being with us, and please meet Bob, who's here in our studios.
Well, thank you, and hello, Bob.
Hi.
Let's start with an overview of how bad things are. They're not very good here in Milwaukee. That may be an understatement, with lots of teachers being laid off. Four-day school weeks are being considered and are already implemented in many districts throughout the country. What has happened to money for education? Bob?
Well, I think the money is still there out in our society, but it's certainly not going to education. Most obvious is that the current recession has limited both state funds and local property of taxpayers' willingness to pay. And so we have a lack of funding. At the same time, you have increased costs, special education students, increase fuel costs, and so on and so forth. So the costs are going up. The ability of funding is going down. But I'd have to add right from the beginning that our society does seem to find ways to fund monies for two wars that have no unending, no sight in the, no ending in the future. We have also spent a lot of money bailing out banks and savings and loans. And so it's really a question in my mind is if we want to support children and schools or if we want to support something else. It's a matter of priorities.
Klaus, I outline what's going on here in Milwaukee and the number of schools going to 4 day school weeks. How many districts are facing pretty severe budget crunches right now?
You know, I can't give you the exact numbers or percentages, but I can tell you most of them. And in fact, districts are facing budget crunches that are unprecedented. Mm. One of the member associations of my group, the Learning First Alliance, the American Association of School Administrators, has done a very good job, actually, of surveying their members to get a sense of just how deep these cuts go, and they're deep and they're unprecedented. So what you're seeing in Milwaukee is by no means an exception to the rule. It's really tough out there.
Bob talked about things that we do fund. We do fund things like wars. We have bailed out the banks. How is it that we can look at what is probably one of the most important things that we do in a society, educate our children, and have an unprecedented crisis? What's wrong?
Well, I mean, it is a question of priorities, of course, and I'm not you know, I don't necessarily want to balance one funding priority against another in that's just not an area we've really dealt with at the Learning First Alliance in particular. But I think it is fair for us to say that funding for education has to be a top priority, and especially now, because now is a time when we're looking at unprecedented reforms. There are a lot of schools and districts out there that are putting into place unprecedented reforms, and those reforms unfortunately require people. They require resources. And it's always true, you know, as some critics will point out, that you can find waste in the system and you can find ways to cut down. But one of my biggest concerns is that when these cuts are made and they're so deep, and when they're made so quickly and under duress, we end up cutting the very things that have really been most promising. And I think that's something we have to take a careful look at.
What will the large number of layoffs mean for schools? And they're already having a hard time for schools in MPS.
Yeah, I agree with Klaus that we've cut so much in the past. We're sort of cut to the bone over the last 5 years, and now we're going right through the bone. I mean, in Milwaukee, it means that there'll be many elementary schools where the children have no music, no art, no physical education. Most Milwaukee public elementary schools do not have librarians, and they're being cut. The high schools are, you know, counselors, very important. And then, of course, the whole issue of class size. The more you cut, the larger the class sizes. And class sizes already, before the cuts this year, in some middle schools in Milwaukee were like 36, 38 students, you know, in math classes. It's ridiculous. It does not afford the opportunity to teach, whether in any kind of innovative style or even in a traditional style, when you have those kind of numbers. It's more warehousing. You know, and there's all these pressures to increase academic achievement, stop the dropouts, and we all agree with those goals. But take a step back. Think what keeps kids interested in school. It's the music, it's the drama, it's the sports. Some of it's academic for sure, but you want to build on both of those. And we have major comprehensive high schools in Milwaukee, like Pulaski High School, has no music program, no chorus, no band. It's a travesty. It's unconscionable. And I think this conversation has to be about looking at it from the perspective of kids and students. They are, many urban and rural areas in particular, already underserviced, under-resourced, and now it's going to be worse next year. It bodes badly for the future.
Bob pointed out that a lot of schools are cutting arts programs, also language programs, yes, is my understanding, too. I can't imagine having gone to school without those programs. That's why school was something to go to every day, Klaus. Plus, they're incredibly important for how you live your life.
Right. That's very true. And I think it's important to get back to something Bob mentioned, and that is that for a lot of kids, programs like programs in the arts and many of the extracurriculars that end up on the chopping block are the hooks.
Yep. Sure.
Those are the things that get kids to come to school and to stay in school when they're less engaged in other areas. And so I think there is some danger to student engagement when we cut those programs. And let's face it, those programs have always been on the chopping block. You know, arts and world languages tend to ebb and you know, flow with the moons, but with the budgets. And so that's a tough situation, but now we see the much more drastic cuts. And I wanted to add something to what Bob mentioned, and that is that many of these cuts tend to hit the lowest income kids hardest.
Yes.
And that's because there aren't other sources of money around for these kids that can make up for them. When the parents and communities have a bit more money, they often can try to replace the money that's been cut out of state and district budgets. That's not so easy in low-income communities. So I think it's something really to take into account. And that goes also for job cuts as well. Mm-hmm. Where do we lose the critical people? And where were those people put in place in some sense to make up for some of the disadvantages these kids are already facing?
There are those who will say, and I'm sure both of you have heard this before, that what's happening is that teachers are asking for too much, that they have these health benefits that are highly expensive, and what we need to do is go to a system where their copays are higher or where they have coverage that's not quite as extensive than what they have now in order to keep schools open. What do you think of that, Bob?
Well, I think that's the issue of healthcare is a very dramatic, relevant issue. I mean, it's interesting. I've traveled and talked to teachers in Canada, Australia, England, and we talk about teacher contract and bargaining, and they say, what's a big issue in Milwaukee or in the state? Well, it's healthcare. And they just sort of laugh at me. They say, oh, you know, we actually talk about education when we bargain, because healthcare is nationally taken care of in those enlightened countries. So it is an issue. Whether or not we should pay X amount versus whatever is an issue that I think should be handled in the bargaining table. I will say that to think that if there's a lot of figures that have been bandied about in Milwaukee in terms of how many jobs could be saved if we took a relatively lower cost health program, and I think most of those costs are exaggerated. I mean, most of the projections are exaggerated, but there probably could be some savings. But to think that the root problem is the teachers having health care benefits that are a little better than the average is actually sort of ludicrous when you think about it. I mean, it's not because of the Milwaukee health care plan that we have 300,000 prospective layoffs around the country. And similarly, we have a couple thousand, according to WEAC estimates, around the state. And some of those teachers have different varying health plans. You know, so it's, to me, it is a topic that we should discuss, that teachers, I think, as any all public employees, have to take a real look at, you know, what compromises can be made. But it's a misdirection of the conversation if we just focus on that. And one of my concerns about local leaders and the local media oftentimes is that's what they like to focus on, into sort of teacher bashing, when they really don't look at the fundamental problems with an inadequate and equitable finance system in the state of Wisconsin and many other states, and the question of priorities that we're talking about.
Right. Let's look at this 4-day work week, which affects a lot of people, not just students and parents, but people who work in the cafeteria in schools, certainly teachers, people who drive the buses, who are facing and have faced already pretty severe cutbacks in their salaries. Is this a movement that a lot of districts and a lot of states are looking at seriously, Klaus?
Yes, I mean, there have been, and again, I can't get you the exact numbers. Those are always difficult to put together, but from anecdote, we know that it's been a topic of conversation in a lot of different places. And, you know, it's a tough one. I don't want to fault people in districts who are saying they're looking for anything they can do to try to ride through these really severe budgetary crises they're facing. The 4-day work week issue, however, is one that's been around for a while, and I think the bottom line about it is, from an educational point of view, is that we really don't have a strong sense of what the impact of that is. My suspicion is that it's not going to have a very strong impact, given how much talk is how much is being discussed these days about the importance of more time in school, especially for lower income kids. Now, there has been research out there to suggest that the 4-day school week may actually have benefits, but there's also been other research out there to suggest that it would not have benefits. And in fact, what's really happening is that we don't know ultimately what we're doing to our kids when we go to these 4-day work weeks in the long run, if we do it en masse. And my worry is that when we go to these kinds of reform strategies, they're driven by budget considerations rather than by considerations or really solid knowledge of what's good for kids, we're into dangerous territory. And again, this is no criticism of the people who face these awfully difficult decisions.
Yeah, and they are pretty much completely driven by budget considerations, aren't they?
I would think so. I mean, there have been some people out there arguing that the 4-day school week may actually be better for kids. There's some research there. As I said, this research is various, and we don't really have enough of it. In fact, on the whole issue of how you spend time in school, there's been a lot of talk about increasing the amount of time for kids, and I think a lot of it has merit, you know, the time they actually spend in school. But we don't really know how best to apply the time, how to use the time, whether we need longer weeks, longer years, longer days, or whether any of that really is the case. And a very esteemed researcher recently laid out these problems for me. So, again, it's a question of moving forward boldly as a result of budgetary concerns without necessarily having the knowledge about what the impact of what our actions are going to be. Not to mention, as you mentioned, the impact on jobs and also on parents who need child care.
Sure.
And kids who get free lunch when they're in school.
Yeah.
Like that.
Bob, what do you think?
I think the things that Klaus raises are well put. Speaking as a teacher who works with kids every day and have for the last 30 years, the kids who come to school 5 days a week are much more together than the ones that only come 4 days a week. And obviously, if you had a four-day work week, you'd schedule your curriculum differently. But I notice, you know, when we have three-day weekends, like for a holiday, President's Day or whatever, sometimes for some kids it takes half day, full day to get sort of back in the routine. Some children's family lives are very disorienting for the kids, or they spend most of the time on video games or whatever. And I'm not making a generalization, but for some children that's the case. And the notion of every week having them off for 3 days and then coming back to me, just on an anecdotal level, strikes me as not well thought out. But I do think that it's mainly a financial issue when people start talking about such things or reducing the school year, at the same time talking about increasing the school hours and school year. And I would just say, as a classroom teacher, I think kids probably should be in school more, but it shouldn't be more of the same. What I've seen over the last several years is, because of all the pressure of testing and, quote, accountability, too much focus on worksheets and drill and kill, as we call them, versus project engage, you know, project kind of things that engage children in critical thinking and in-depth research. To say nothing about the arts, music, FIAD. Let's expand school an hour every day, but let's have an hour of physical education taught to students by trained physical education teachers. We would see academics go way up and kids would come to school.
Why don't we catch on to that? That makes people are going to call in and say, of course, that's what we should do. And everybody's obese. Not everybody, but there are a lot of students who are. And it's true. If you move around and you do that, you think better.
Absolutely.
It's fairly obvious. Let's welcome phone calls. There is, of course, which we mentioned earlier, a $23 billion education jobs fund being proposed to prevent layoffs and to deal with these unprecedented, as Klaus called them, budget problems in districts all over the country. We'll talk more about that and where it stands with both our guests in just a moment. Here is the number for you to join us, please, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. And the email address, we already have one of those, is talk@wpr.org. Maybe some of you listening have been laid off as teachers, and we can talk about why that has happened, or you have no teachers who have been laid off. What about this four-day week as a budget-saving measure? And how is it that we've reached a point where we have to do this when education is so critical in our society? We'd like to hear from you. 800-486-8655. Our guests are Klaus von Sastro, Executive Director of the Learning First Alliance and a blogger at edutopia.org and publicschoolinsights.org. Bob Peterson teaches fifth grade at La Escuela Fratney, which is here in Milwaukee. It's a two-way bilingual public school. He's also a founding editor of Rethinking Schools. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Second hour of our program today, the author of Broke USA, From Pawn Shops to Poverty, How the Working Poor Became Big Business, Gary Rivlin will be joining us. Let's go to phone calls, starting with Chuck in Wausau. Hi, Chuck.
Hi. You know, I wanted to ask about extracurricular funding for extracurricular activities. Certainly, I'm aware that, you know, Eric Jensen wrote a book called Teaching with the Brain in Mind some years back, and he cites a Canadian study that says that if you make structured physical activity a third of the curricular day, kids just max out on their academic testing. So I'm in favor of that. However, in Wausau, we, of course, like every other district in the state, have a real budget crisis. I asked our administrator last fall about the funding for after-school sports activities, and his literal answer was, we looked at that, cutting the after-school sports activities wasn't going to fill the gap in our budget, so we decided not to cut any of them. And I would like the guest's opinion about where after-school sports activities really fits into our mission as public school educators.
Bob, you want to start?
Yeah, well, I support after-school sports activities. I support during-school sports activities, you know, physical education. We've at Fratna, we lost our music teacher. We lost our physical education teacher 5 years ago. When I say lost, I mean budget cuts. And I, as a classroom teacher, have to teach both those. And I've learned that it's hard to be a good music or physical education teacher. You know, so first of all, I'll just say that our kids deserve that during the school day. After school, I think, you know, kids, that's also good. It should be, I think it should be funded. I know in Milwaukee, it's sort of, it's a little different funding stream through the recreation program, but they're suffering cutbacks as well. So I guess my point is that if we value kids and if they're a priority, they should have those kind of publicly funded programming both during school and after school. I know kids in my fifth grade who come, and they've definitely come on certain days for sure because one of our teachers' husbands volunteers to do the basketball team afterwards, and they're there for sure. And so I support that.
Hmm. Your thoughts on this, Klaus?
Well, I too support it, and I think I agree with much of what Bob has said. There has, in fact, been research, and I'm afraid I'm not familiar with the research that the caller cites, but there has been research suggesting that physical activity and really good physical education for kids in school and also after school can improve their academic performance. Yes, after school physical activities and sports and things like that are also on the chopping block, along with so many other important things. And again, I want to stress that some of those activities that are, especially when they're publicly funded, because there's been a trend towards getting them, you know, funded by parents and communities,
right,
when they're publicly funded is when they're especially helpful to low-income kids. So it really, again, is a question of impact primarily on the kids who most need these kinds of things, who often are most prone to become obese, who don't necessarily have outdoor facilities that they can use very well. And when they have subsidized activities in the evenings, it can lead to all sorts of different benefits. I want to add one other thing, though. As with everything else, when we're considering cuts and when we're considering what we're losing, it also gives us an occasion to consider how we can best use the time once, and I hope we do get these kinds of resources back, because time for physical activity, like anything else, has to be well used. And as Bob mentions, it's very difficult to be a phys ed teacher, so quality has to be in our equation, too.
Right. And it's an important thing to do. I mean, Bob's a great teacher. He's won awards for his teaching, but he shouldn't be expected to be, in addition to everything else, a physical education teacher or a music teacher.
Right.
He may not know a whole lot. Forgive me, Bob. You know a lot about other things.
I won't start singing.
About those topics. He won't start singing. Can we, for just a moment here, talk about federal help? What is this Keep Our Educators Working Act? Who has created this? It's federal money. Is a lot of it? Will it help solve some of these budgetary problems?
Well, it's a bill in the Senate. It's Tom Harkin's bill, sort of. And in the House, it was Representative Miller from California. And it's $23 billion. It's basically an extension. It's stimulus funding, similar to what was adopted last year. Last year, there was $100 billion for schools. And it's estimated that saves some, by the NEA, some 300,000 jobs of all various kinds. So this is less, but it's crucial because the stimulus monies that kept some people working last year have run out for the most part. And as I mentioned, the taxes that have been coming into the state coffers and local coffers are less. And so unless this bill gets passed, the cuts are going to be even deeper than we hope. For people in Wisconsin, I strongly encourage them to talk to, you know, to call Senator Kohl and Feingold and to tell them that this is what our children need. And callers need to do it today and tomorrow because it could come up for a vote. There's different ways it could come up. I know it's Congressman Obie from Wisconsin has called it an emergency, and he's very much in support of it. He's linked it to a supplemental spending bill, and there's been some back and forth with the Republicans about whether or not it should be included in this bill, which would fund a number of things, everything from Haitian relief to the war. And he has made some changes or offered to make some changes. One of the concerns was whether or not the money would actually be spent to help, you know, for teachers right now, or would it be put away by local districts, sort of rainy day funds. And Congressman Obie has said that he, in his, what he is offering is very explicit, that this money will be spent this school year to help put our educators back to work.
Mm-hmm. I know that your organization is supportive of this act. Am I correct, Klaus?
Yes. Yes, we supported it, and for many of the reasons that Bob suggests, it is important as an extension of the stimulus. One thing that a word that was used very often as the stimulus was first being crafted was the cliff. There was this notion that once those funds ran out and state coffers didn't get any fuller in the meantime, districts would face this, they would fall off the edge of a cliff. Yeah. Suddenly they would just have to do all the terrible things a couple years later that they were faced with a couple years earlier. And that really means that the stimulus wouldn't have had its intended effect in the long run. So the money really is pretty critical to keep the people back, keep people in their jobs doing the work that they're supposed to do. And it also has important economic benefits as well.
We go to Jennifer from Arborvita. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm an educator myself. I teach at-risk youth, and I guess I have two, maybe three things. One is that everybody wants our students to do so well on that nationalized testing, but yet nobody wants to pay for the education process. And two, it just seems like, as teaching at-risk youth, parents seem to have taken a step back in responsibility for their kids' education. It's as if students are placed into our care for 8 hours, and we're supposed to create miracles with them. And I'm a little concerned about that. And the last thing is, I'm not really sure if it went to a four-day school for a lot of my students is the one safe place that they have. So if we went to a four-day week, where would they go? They'd be back out on the streets for that other day. Mm-hmm. So I'm not really sure how a four-day week would be beneficial, as well as people that are already financially stressed. How would they be able to afford daycare for that extra day?
Right. Yeah, it's very hard on parents, too. Klaus, you want to start?
Let me begin with the last comment on school being the one safe place. I think that is especially a concern with the four-day school week, and especially in communities where school is so much more than just school for students. And school can mean that's the place where they eat. As you say, it could be the one safe place. It could be one of the only places where they have really consistent interaction with an adult, a guide, and it can be one of the places where they have stability. Not to mention the stress it places on working parents who don't necessarily have daycare options. So that those are all, I think, strong considerations, especially in communities like the one in which Jennifer is teaching. On the issue of parents and their responsibility, I think also one thing to remember there as well is that many parents, especially in low-income communities, have so many stresses on them that often the attempt just to make ends meet makes it very difficult to do all the things that they really do want to do with their kids. And so having resources in place for parents as well, and in which help parents also articulate their needs better to schools, are really quite important to have in place. And, of course, those are also going to be casualties of some really, really tough budget times.
Mm-hmm.
In Milwaukee, for example, you mentioned the teacher layoffs, the substitute layoffs. There's also 233 paraprofessionals or educational assistants who are being laid off. And many of those people have their kids in the public schools. And I know in many different schools, we've over the years had to lay off a parent organizer who was of that sort of a paraprofessional who spent a lot of time working with parents to get them to come into school, to come to education classes and so on and so forth. And when you cut back that, then there's less parent involvement.
Right. My understanding from reading the material on this is that there are certain areas that are hit harder than others. Some would find it incomprehensible that MPS, which is a struggling district and has a lot of at-risk young people, is suffering these kinds of cutbacks. I also understand that when you look at four-day school weeks, it's hitting rural districts across the United States. Why is it? It seems to indicate that there's a problem with how we're funding our schools. If poor urban and rural districts are bearing the brunt of this, what's happening with wealthier districts? Do they just have parents who are stepping up to the plate, or organizations, businesses who are funding some of these arts programs? There's an inequity here, is there?
there is an inequity. And at the same time, I know, talking to my colleagues and friends who might live in the suburbs or exurbs, they're getting some cuts too. However, they haven't had the range and the depth of cuts the last 5-10 years that we have. So, you know, we're already cut to the bone. We're breaking the bone. They're just starting to go down, you know, to use that metaphor. But it's so I think we're all in it together. It's in everybody's interest to support the Harkin bill. But it's also, as Klaus has been mentioning, the cuts are hurting low-income communities the most. And it should be a wake-up call as we look at this financial mess the schools are in about how can we restructure the funding of education so that it is equitable and adequate. And that's something that is probably going to have to happen on the state level, although it could be pushed by the feds. If in the race to the top criteria, for example, Arne Duncan would have said you can only qualify if you have or you get more points if you have an equitable and adequate funding system as defined by this, that might have pushed people in a certain way, just as he said you have to have no laws to limit charter That's schools true. Or something like that. Well, let's let the federal government step up to the plate and push states to do a better, more adequate and equitable funding.
Let's go next. Jennifer, thanks for the call. Melinda is next in Bristol. Hi, Melinda.
Hi. A couple of things. Well, first of all, I agree as far as...
Melinda, you're going to have to call us back. I'm afraid your phone is just... we can't hear what you're saying, which is important. Teresa in Green Bay. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. I had just some questions concerning the health insurance. I know most teachers are receiving better health insurance, and I'm wondering if that's a compensation for the different pay scales that we receive as teachers, whereas if you look at most business professionals that do carry college and university degrees, you know, their pay makes up for what they have to pay for health insurance, but yet they're still receiving some basic and pretty good health insurance. And my second concern was based on the 4-day work week. With working with students in high-risk populations, attendance usually becomes an issue. And I noticed that most students, when we do have breaks or holiday breaks, to get them back to school on time and within the calendar year can be a struggle. And I'm just wondering if MPS has looked at that as a possible issue.
Okay, thank you.
Just to be clear, MPS is not looking at a 4-day school.
No.
Day. It's at some other districts. And I don't think anybody in Wisconsin would look at that, given that there are certain state laws that probably would have to be changed to do that. But in terms of the salary, the point that the caller makes is a good one, which is basically teachers who have 4-year degrees oftentimes start at salaries that are less than other 4-year degreed engineers or whatever. And so even though they get less salary, their benefits, their health benefits might be a little higher. So she's basically arguing that might even out. I think there's a lot of truth to that. Again, the devil's in the details. And, you know, that's something for communities, school boards, and teacher unions to work out. But the bottom line is that if people are spending their time sort of throwing darts at teachers saying we're the cause of this budget crunch, I just ask them to look more deeply at what's really going on across the country. And it's quite frankly, we know it's not only in schools. It's public services. It's our parks. It's, you know, it's generally the public sector. And that's, again, is something we have to decide as a society. Do we think it's important to put funds into public sector venues so everybody benefits? Or do we further stratify our society by class so people have their big backyards and private swimming pools, but our public swimming pools and public parks deteriorate? The same thing applies in schools, parks, and a number of venues.
Mm-hmm. Do you agree with that analysis, Klaus?
Yeah. I mean, to the extent, I'll go back to the question of health insurance as a compensation for pay scale.
Right.
And I think Bob was right to say that this kind of thing has to be dealt with, of course, locally. But I think a broader concern that I've had with a lot of the rhetoric recently about cost, and in particular the cost of teachers, is that it's been trending towards some sort of myth that teachers are overcompensated in the end. And that strikes me as, in most places, unsupported by the facts. You know, as someone who's married to a teacher who knows quite a few teachers, I know few of them who are overcompensated. And
exactly.
But you know, even beyond that, I think the concern is then how do we create an environment, a set of conditions, pay and otherwise, that convinces people that teaching is a career they want to commit to over the long term, with full accountability to do extraordinarily well. But the tendency of recent commentary on teacher compensation, I think, especially in the current crisis, has been that somehow teachers' conditions and pay are expendable things, and that is worrisome to me, because we haven't really, in fact, it's harder these days to have that bigger conversation about what it is that really keeps passionate teachers in the classroom and make that long-term commitment.
Good point.
Thanks, Teresa, for the call. Here's an email from Jim, who said he's a supporter of good education, but not at any cost. The U.S. is in a full-flight economic depression. Many people are strapped financially. They might be out of work, and their assets are down. We can't expect the education system to continue in the business-as-usual mode. Schools, administrators, teachers, and students should be prepared to do the same with less resources. And if they can't do that, then they will just have to do less. Everything across the board, including athletics, must be cut. Parents should be prepared to spend more time teaching their children. If we can't fix the economy, then education has to take a hit.
The comment makes me think something that Jesse Jackson Sr. said many years ago, which he said basically, if we have a choice, we can either put money into the front end of life for kids, or we're going to put a lot more money into the back end. And he was talking about doing well by kids when early childhood, elementary, high school, or ending up paying a huge amount in the judicial system, incarceration. And while I appreciate the caller's concern about everybody having to take sacrifice, I would argue that the teachers and the students in Milwaukee and many districts have been sacrificing for the last 5 or 10 years. We have had constant cuts, but at this point, the cut, it crosses the line. The damage that's going to be caused to the children and their futures is so great that I hope that people listening will step up and take some action to try to resolve this to some extent.
Well, also, ironically, we're simultaneously asking students to do much better on the tests. We're looking seriously at teachers to say, what is it that you can do as a teacher to make sure that your students perform much better when it comes to standardized tests and other kinds of testing? How can you do both of these things when you're cutting your budget so severely? I mean, they're cross purposes, aren't they, Klaus?
Well, I mean, in many cases, the cuts are, I think, and again, I have to go by anecdote here because you can't find the big, huge research study that proves this, but the anecdotes are pretty compelling. In many cases, the cuts are putting at risk reforms in specific districts and schools that were gaining traction. And, you know, your commenter via email there makes a point about an entire society having to share in the burdens of a financial crisis. And I think that's a fair point to make. But I want to go back to Bob's point, and that is that we have to make investments where they'll pay off later. One of them really is in education. You know, while there are always ways of saving money and reducing waste, I'm worried about a situation in which we make these kinds of cuts so hastily, under duress, and with so little ability to review the impact or the relative impact they're going to have on student success, particularly in low-income communities, that we might actually be undercutting our success down the road. So the conditions for making these cuts, not only the depth of these cuts, let's not forget, even the stimulus money that's already come through did not plug the holes. Very often, if you were to listen to media reports, you had this notion that the stimulus funding, in some sense, created this untold bounty for schools. It just wasn't the case. So there already has been a good deal of sacrifice. So, you know, I think, yes, we do have to talk about efficiency, and we do have to talk about quality in very serious ways, but I'm worried that cuts made so quickly and under such distress aren't going to give us what we want down the road.
Tina in Wauwatosa. Hi.
Hi. I'm a teacher, and I keep hearing about cutting this and cutting that. And then I also hear how our children are not as intellectually intelligent. Well, okay, that's kind of the same thing, but, you know, as smart as children, say, in Japan. And in Japan, they usually have 2 to 3 hours of homework a night, and they also go to school half-day Saturday. And they don't have the huge break during the summer. So I don't think cutting education is going to be the way to go if we truly want to reach these students. And the other comment is, you know, I liked what you said about the 3-day weekend. Not only that, but we also have this huge 10-day time off around the holiday of Christmas, which has been very traditional, and there are a lot of students who aren't even Christian. So why are we taking these huge breaks? And I'll take my comments
Okay, Tina, thanks. Bob?
I agree a lot with what the caller said about academic achievement and the need for resources. I'll give you one example. There's a really big push in Milwaukee to change, improve the reading scores. Milwaukee has some of the lowest reading scores in the country, and it's something that we should all be very concerned about. At the same time, we cut our librarians. And it doesn't make any sense. In fact, the kids, we were threatened with our librarian being cut at Fratney, and my fourth and fifth grade students formed a group called the Rescue Our Librarians Club. And actually, people can go to saveourlibrarians.org and see their little website. But the point was that we want to have we think there should be librarians in every school, not just our school, because librarians are so central to helping teachers find books, connecting kids with books, and broader technological internet kind of things. And I just, you know, one of the things, the kids actually met with representatives, Congresswoman Gwen Moore, office, and Gwen is thinking of trying to put in an amendment to the reauthorization of the NCLB, which would have federal funding for librarians, physical education teachers, art and music. And I think people in the area should encourage Gwen to do that, because that would be one way the federal government could really help. It's not going to help next September, but it's something down the line. I think the federal government has to step up in terms of some of the funding for these kind of things.
Mm-hmm. We're welcoming phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, for you to join this conversation about what's happening with education, teachers being laid off in Wisconsin, in Milwaukee rather, in very large numbers, and substitute teachers and teachers who are helping the classroom as well. We have 4-day weeks going on. We have arts programs being cut and physical education programs being cut, and a movement nationally, a Keep Our Educators Working Act, which would help in some measure to create a $23 billion education jobs fund to help schools with their unprecedented budget problems. So join our conversation. We'll be back with you in a moment on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And we go back to your phone calls. Dave in Door County. Hi.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. As I told you, screener, I haven't heard the whole program, but I'd like to say first a quote. I think it's Benjamin Franklin who said that necessity is the mother of invention. And, you know, call it duress or call it necessity, it seems to me that, you know, right now there's an unavoidable opportunity to start thinking outside of the box when it comes to education. I mean, obviously, a lot of things are having to be thought of a little differently. But, you know, I live in a school district in northern Door County that the average cost per student per year is well over $15,000. And, you know, when I hear, and I've been involved with this for a while, I have children. I have 8 children total, most of whom are out of the school system right now. But most of the talk I've heard over the years, especially maybe the last 10 years about reform, really don't amount to much in the way of what I would call thinking outside of the box.
And what does that mean for you, thinking outside the box?
Well, you know, as I mentioned to your screener, and I'm sure you know, Kathleen, yesterday you had a program on in the afternoon that talked about a school somewhere in South Dakota that were moving toward a four-day work week successfully, and they were talking about why they were doing it and how they were doing it, and it amounted to just better time management for the students and the teachers. And I just think that, you know, rather than attempting to pluck on people's heartstrings and, you know, essentially using fear of the future for these, for our children, you know, thinking of ways to do things. I mean, there's lots of things going on in the country, charter school. I mean, outside of the public schools, probably mostly. But, you know, in private education, even in some places in public education, I mean, it's clear that, you know, our schools are set in a culture that's not only having difficulties economically, but socially as well. I mean, even up here in what I guess most people would consider affluent Door County, the social structure, the social environment in school amounts to a challenged daycare center where education is almost a secondary thought.
All right, let's go to Klaus for a response first. Hi, Klaus.
Hi. Well, let me go back to some of Dave's earlier thoughts about you know, thinking outside the box, and it is important. I think, you know, as we consider trying to stave off some of these really terrible cuts that are coming to schools, it is important to keep thinking out of the box. And it is sometimes true that necessity can be the mother of invention. However, when the cuts are as deep as they are, so many of the things that we want to do outside of the box are simply off the table because of the depth of these cuts. And so I don't know that outside-the-box ideas driven primarily by very deep budget cuts are the best ones to consider. Now, I'll take the four-day work week as an, or excuse me, the four-day school week as an example. As I mentioned, there is some research out there suggesting that the four-day school week has had benefits in some areas over what had been done before because of better time management. But that raises another issue, and that is that we have to figure out how best to use time in schools. I'm not sure the four-day box is the best way to do it. When you consider that a lot of the research that's happening in some of the most high-flying charter schools, for example, points to more time for kids, especially kids in low-income areas, which, in fact, you know, drives a lot of our concerns about the problems with public schools in those areas. So if we were able to increase the amount of time, that has big budget implications and something that's hard to do in the current environment. That, however, is one of the out-of-the-box kinds of strategies that's been under the greatest discussion that has some research behind it. So I still think that in an atmosphere of extreme financial restraint, we can't expect the best reforms necessarily to flourish.
He mentioned $15,000 a student, Bob. That seems like a lot of money.
We could benefit a lot from that kind of spending on the Milwaukee Public School students. My students would greatly. I mean, that's one of the things. You know, my kids who are born, you know, if they had been born, you know, 2 miles north, in a more affluent suburb, they would have a lot more resources spent on them by our society. And yet they're from families who, my students, who oftentimes are economically distressed. So it's just, you know, it's both societal and familial economic inequality that blossoms and multiplies and really hurts our students.
Let's go to Randy from Campbellsport. Hi, Randy.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
Yeah, one thing I've seen, you know, I graduated from high school about 35 years ago, and since in the time in between, we probably have 10 times the administration that we used to have in these schools, and you need to go and get rid of about three-quarters of that because half of them are dead weight and things that other people could do. The other thing that needs to be done is WEAC needs to get blown up. These teachers' unions do nothing for the good teachers, and all they do is protect the dead weight. I know of teacher in a local district that a couple years ago the principal had to come in at the end of the school year and fill in his grade book because he hadn't done it. He's still there. He isn't doing much of anything, but he's still there.
All right. Bob, why don't you take this one?
Yeah, well, in terms of the teachers union, I'll take the second one first. What can I say? I mean, in the sense that I think that the teacher unions have played a very positive role, although I have to say, I'll stay right off, I've written a book called Transforming Teacher Unions, that they can play a more progressive role in certain ways. I'll give one example that the caller mentioned, the incompetent or inadequate teacher. In Milwaukee, we've negotiated an agreement with the school board, which is called the TEAM program, where teachers who are identified by a principal or a colleague who are struggling are put through a semester of help or training by veteran teachers, and then they're evaluated by both administrators and teachers. And if they're not up to snuff, they're counseled out of teaching. And dozens of teachers have both been counseled out of teachers, and dozens of teachers have gotten the support they need so they become better teachers. Those kind of programs we should support, because there is a problem with teachers who are struggling. As far as the administration goes, I'm the first to say if you can point out some administrative top-heavy bureaucratic stuff, let's cut it. In Milwaukee, it's been cut to the bone. And I'm the first to criticize administrators, and people know that. I'm an advocate from the bottom up. But at the central office of a district of 80,000, we have one person in charge of social studies, one administrator left for English language arts. For 80,000 kids, it's been cut to the bone. So it's really – that's not – we might be able to save a little bit of money, but – it's the bigger questions that we've been talking about during this program today, the funding sources, the funding systems, and hopefully some relief funding through the Harkin bill that I hope the callers will address.
Yeah. Thank you both so much for being with us. We'll be on this topic again because it's one of the most important topics around, I would say. Thanks, Bob. Thank you, Klaus, very much.
Thank you.
Our guest, Bob Peterson, a fifth grade teacher at La Escuela Fratney here in Milwaukee, a two-way bilingual public school. He's also a founding editor of Rethinking Schools. Klaus von Sastro, executive director of the Learning First Alliance. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, to Chrissy Pease for on-air production here in our Milwaukee studios, and thanks for your comments. Sorry we didn't get to all of them, but we were overloaded here. We'll be back.